We start today with President Joe Biden's State of the Union. Republicans eager for him to crumble and to be unable to speak and to make up words and to get wrong who is president of the United States and to get wrong what city he's giving the speech in and to get wrong which would be the next world war and to get wrong the leaders of other nations. All things Trump has done recently. But Joe Biden didn't do any of those things, delivering a stunning, stunning speech in which he both laid out some very sensible, progressive proposals, as well as again laid a trap for Republicans, which they fell into. And they have become so unhinged that MAGA Mike Johnson sat down rather than cheering for ending cancer. He's so pro-life. He took the side of the cancer cells. I have never seen anything like this. And as good as the speech was, notable how disgusting and deranged this Republican Party has become. Here is Joe Biden talking about the infrastructure bill that many of the Republicans in the audience voted against, yet take credit for it.
And thanks. And thanks to our bipartisan infrastructure law, 46,000 new projects have been announced all across your communities. And by the way, I noticed some of you strongly voted against it, or they're cheering on that money coming in.
That's right.
I like it. I'm with you. I'm with you. If any of you don't want that money in your district, just let me know.
Send the money back. No, of course, they voted against it. And then they brag, look at all the money that I brought us. Then Republicans making the same mistake again. Stunning that Joe Biden got him to do it again, allowing Joe Biden to box them in with these traps about, oh, you're not proposing that? Oh, then certainly you're against it, right? Listen to this.
Not fair. We have two ways to go. Republicans can cut Social Security and give more tax breaks to the wealthy. I will. That's the proposal. Oh, no. You guys don't want another $2 trillion tax cut? I kind of thought that's what your plan was. Well, that's good to hear. You're not going to cut another $2 trillion for the super wealthy. That's good to hear. I'll protect and strengthen Social Security and make.
And once again, Republicans in their immediate reflexive reaction to say, no, 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 he's lying about what we want, I guess are saying we're actually not going to do that thing, which is the exact same trap they fell into last time. And of course, they were lying. Then Joe Biden suggesting an expansion of tutoring as well as summer learning. And Republicans don't clap. They don't stand. What? This is what the party has become.
I want to expand high quality tutoring and summer learning to see that every child learns to read by third grade.
Something so uncontroversial, and MAGA Mike is like a potted plant. He doesn't even want to move. Joe Biden saying he will not be demonizing immigrants as poisoning the blood of our country. One of the biggest direct attacks on things that the failed former president Donald Trump has said.
I will not demonize immigrants saying they are poisoning the blood of our country. I will not.
MAGA Mike not clapping for that either. I guess MAGA Mike wants demonizing immigrants as poisoning the blood.
Separate families. I will not ban people because of their faith. Unlike my predecessor, on my first day in office, I introduced a comprehensive bill to fix our immigration.
So, you know, for a guy who doesn't know what day it is, this was really quite a speech. Joe Biden also laying out the idea of providing an annual tax credit to give Americans $400 a month for a 2-year period because mortgage rates are so high, basically to counterbalance the much higher mortgage payments people have because prevailing mortgage rates have been high.
Benefit millions of lives all across America. I know the cost of housing is so important to you. If inflation keeps coming down, mortgage rates will come down as well. And the Fed acknowledges that. But I'm not waiting. I want to provide an annual tax credit that will give Americans $400 a month for the next 2 years as mortgage rates come down, to put toward their mortgages when they buy their first home or trade up for a little more space.
Just for 2 years. Republicans seemingly don't like that either. And, you know, the incredible contrast with last night's speech was that there are ideas here. You don't have to like every idea. Maybe you like the tutoring, but you don't like the mortgage subsidy. Or maybe you don't like the attempt to deal with cancer, as MAGA Mike didn't stand up. I'll show you that in a moment. But there are ideas here. And what the alternative is from MAGA is a completely different vision, a disgusting vision, a negative vision, but also a vision that is completely antithetical to everything the country should be. Here's the weird and wacky cancer moment where MAGA Mike Johnson won't even stand for ending cancer.
But we can do big things, like end cancer as we know it, and we will.
I mean, at least he's clapping mildly, very, very mildly, with no enthusiasm. I guess he's clapping for the idea of ending cancer. Joe Biden mentioning the situation in Israel and Gaza with the direct statement that he is directing the military to lead a mission to set up a pier on the coast of Gaza such that large shipments of aid could be brought in unimpeded.
I'm directing the U.S. military to lead an emergency mission to establish a temporary pier in the Mediterranean on the coast of Gaza that can receive large shipments carrying food, water, medicine, and temporary shelters. No U.S. boots will be on the ground. A temporary pier will enable a massive increase in the amount of humanitarian assistance getting into Gaza every day.
Also something that many Republicans didn't like. They just don't like anything. They don't like Biden accomplishing anything. And finally, Joe Biden addresses the issue of his age, which was an interesting moment.
The issue facing our nation isn't how old we are. It's how old are our ideas.
Right.
Anger, revenge, retribution are the oldest of ideas. But you can't lead America with ancient ideas that only take us back. You lead America, the land of possibilities. You need a vision for the future and what can and should be done. Tonight you've heard mine. I see a future where defending democracy, you don't diminish it. I see a future where we restore the right to choose and protect our freedoms, not take them away.
And this is very much antithetical to the view of the Republican Party right now under MAGAism. And here is Biden wrapping the speech. And it was a long speech. It was a wide speech, wide ranging. And it was quite a good speech.
And I will always be president for all Americans because I believe in America. I believe in you, the American people. You're the reason we've never been more optimistic about our future than I am now. So let's build the future together. Let's remember who we are. We are the United States of America. And there is nothing, nothing beyond our capacity when we act together. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Well, it was an excellent speech and something particularly repulsive as a counternote of seeing MAGA Mike Johnson like a potted plant behind Joe Biden. So there are competing visions here, and those competing visions could not be more clear. And even in the reaction to this speech, we saw them with the right able to respond with nothing of substance. So instead, they went with he's on drugs. Let's talk about that next. The State of the Union address from Joe Biden last night was excellent. You don't have to like the guy. You don't have to like everything he proposed. You don't have to like his tie. But it was an excellent speech that contrasted what is a horrifying vision of what the next 4 years should be and a vision that makes a lot of sense. Fox News, able to really do nothing with the substance, they have a new take. The new take is implying that Biden's on drugs because in some speeches he's low energy And last night, he was high energy. Take a look at what they are describing as the compare and contrast of jacked up Joe not being his normal self.
Administrator here with me, EPA Administrator Regan, as well.
But they failed. America stood. America stood strong. And democracy prevails.
All right. So they're doing the entire he's jacked up on something. Fascinatingly, what he's jacked up on is an effective speech. Before the speech, based on a CNN poll, 45% of the country thought we were moving in the right direction. After watching the speech, 62% of that same group did. And here is Sean Hannity again. He's like, oh, he was talking so fast. He was screaming. Maybe he was on something.
And welcome to Hannity. We start tonight with a Fox News alert. Tonight, President Joe Biden laid out his radical wish list for America. His speech was so hyped up, it was bizarre. I will not be shouting the whole hour. Frankly, so at odds with everyday Joe, it's even frightening to me. He spent most of the night shouting, speeding through his speech, and clearly overcompensating from the normal everyday Joe that can barely string two sentences together. At times, it became uncomfortable watching him screaming and yelling and speeding through that speech. The AP affectionately called it feisty. I guess that's one way to describe it. Tonight, America saw let's say a very different Joe Biden. I might call him jacked up Joe.
So anyway, the whole implication here is he's on drugs. I was at the White House yesterday with the Vice President Kamala Harris. She told us that a lot of the prep was hydration. She didn't mention anything about amphetamines, but maybe she just forgot to mention that. So listen, when they lose on substance, they go to style. And so they're going with this. And by the way, someone who, when it comes to style, really failed last night, Marjorie Taylor Greene. I want to briefly talk about that next. Radical and repugnant Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene was decked out in MAGA regalia yesterday at the State of the Union. It was so bizarre and off-putting that when Joe Biden saw it, he actually looked stunned. Here is video of Joe Biden coming around the corner and seeing Marjorie Taylor Greene, and you will see that he reacts like he just saw a ghost. His eyes go big, and he's like, what the hell am I actually looking at here? And here is another angle of this greeting. You can't really hear too much of what's being said, but Marjorie Taylor Greene is filming. She's wearing a MAGA hat. She's wearing some kind of MAGA shirt. She's got stickers. She just looks like a fool. I don't know what she said. Thank you something. Thank you, Biden. I don't know exactly what she said. She later described being asked to leave unless she was going to take the hat off. And she says she just stayed.
But here's what offended me. Here's what I found to be outrageous is Sergeant at Arms came up and told me that I needed to take the hat off. And I said, I'm not taking the hat off. I refuse to take it off. And he said, well, it's decorum. I said, I certainly understand. You do what you need to do. I'll pay a fine. I'll do whatever, a warning, whatever there is. But I'm not taking the hat off.
All right. So she refused to take the hat off. And as we know, everybody is very impressed and very proud of Marjorie Taylor Greene. So excellent speech. Pathetic reactions from right-wing media. Pathetic sideshows from Marjorie Taylor Greene, essentially summing up the night. We're going to take some of your calls on the bonus show. I will tell you about my trip to D.C. and the meeting with the vice president. Let me tell you about something I use every day just because it's a way I can simplify my life. And I'm looking for simple these days. I don't always perfectly plan every meal and calculate every vitamin and mineral and micro. I get close, but the reason I turn to our sponsor AG1 is that it makes it easy every morning before my cappuccino. I have a scoop of AG1 mixed into water. I get the 75 vitamins and minerals that I want from whole food sourced ingredients. And it's just so easy. You can't find a more comprehensive powder supplement on the market. I get my daily nutrients. I increase my vitamin, mineral, and antioxidant intake. AG1 is just easier and it's more cost effective than dealing with dozens of vitamin bottles and the whole thing. Just simplify things for yourself with AG1. One scoop a day, get your nutritional bases covered. I recommend AG1 to friends. Many of them have picked it up and love it. Try AG1, get a free year supply of vitamin D3 and K2, plus five free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/Pacman. That's drinkag1.com/Pacman. The link is in the podcast notes. One of our sponsors today is BetterHelp. I have long been an advocate of psychotherapy. Whether you have an ongoing issue, a particular temporary situation that's causing stress, I think most people can benefit from spending time with a therapist. Give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. There are so many benefits to doing therapy online. It'll work on your schedule wherever you are. No more waiting rooms and sitting in traffic or having to take 3 hours off of work to get down and back for a 45 or 50 minute session. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Pacman Show today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Pacman Show. The link is in the podcast notes. You may remember a few years ago, the show got hacked and several thousand dollars were stolen. We never got it back. But now I have a lot more peace of mind because we use Aura. Our sponsor Aura is the all-in-one tool to protect your online and financial accounts. Aura alerts you anytime your personal info is found on the dark web or in data breaches, could be social security number, logins, financial accounts. You will get very fast alerts if a criminal does something like try to open up a bank account in your name, take out credit in your name. Aura will also monitor your bank accounts, your home and auto titles, which can help to guard against fraud. And Aura even protects your phone by letting you block and screen spam calls and texts. Aura has parental controls for your kids' devices to restrict apps, manage screen time, set focus time. You can try Aura free for 14 days at aura.com/Pacman. It only takes a few seconds to use the free trial to see if your username and passwords have been leaked online. That's aura.com/Pacman. The link is in the podcast notes. The David Pacman Show, of course, has been and continues to be an audience-supported program. People just like you, I meet them all the time. They really are just like you. They say, I kind of like what David's doing. I'm going to get a membership. And they sign up at joinpacman.com. We do an extra show every day called The Bonus Show for our members and so many other really great things. You can sign up at joinpacman.com and use the coupon code SAVEDEMOCRACY24 to save bigly off of the cost of a membership. Let's talk to the most important people, the audience members. Without you, I'm a guy in a room with a microphone and lights talking to nobody. And that would be such a sad existence. We don't want that. You can find the David Pacman Show Discord at davidpacman.com/discord. That's what we use on the Friday show to hear from people. And we're going to start with an undecided voter. How? This should be interesting. Miles from Denver, you're undecided. Who are you considering?
Hi, so you can hear me, correct?
Yes, I can.
I just wanted to make sure. So, well, let me put it this way. When I say undecided, it's that it's not so much that I have any intention to vote for Trump. It's just that I feel very undecided about my thoughts on Biden. So I forget which, I don't know if it was a poll or sort of, it was like an election where a big percentage of the voters, a recent one, I forget which state it was, and a big percentage of the voters or a chunk of them, they were sort of saying it wasn't the word undecided, but I think,
okay, Miles, let me talk to, let me explain what's going on. And your audio is crackling. I don't know if you can do anything about that. In the Michigan Democratic primary, Joe Biden got 81% of the vote. but about 10% of the primary voters said that they are uncommitted. They're not saying they're voting for someone else. They're just saying uncommitted to send a message that they don't like Joe Biden's handling of what's going on in Gaza.
Yeah. And do I sound any better, by the way?
Yeah, maybe a little. I don't know.
Okay, well, apologies for that. Yeah, that's what the word I was looking for is more uncommitted, because I couldn't remember what that phrase was. But I do feel that's what more describes me.
Okay, so, here's the practical question. What I want to know, Miles, is give me the list of your possible actions on November 5th. So, for example, you might say, okay, here's the choices. I vote Biden, or I vote third party, or I vote, I stay home. Give me the list of options you're considering as of today.
So as of right now, I feel that my only option, if I want to proceed against democracy being in danger, is to vote for Biden. But it's more along the question I wanted to ask you is, as a progressive, which is what I feel I identify as, and you've called Biden the most progressive candidate or progressive president of our, you know, modern history, what would you say, like, just to ask you, because I think we'll agree on this, are like the top three most wanted progressive policy changes? Like, if you had just to name them off the top of your head.
You're saying, Biden aside, just what would be my top three that I would want to deal with?
You know, your universal health care, things like that.
Yeah. So I think the big overarching things would be, let's get everybody health care, five or six different ways that I would be up for doing it. But we've got to get everybody health care. Let's solve homelessness. We have five or six different strategies. Make sure everybody has a home. And number three, let's solve hunger. And if we can get everybody food, a home, and healthcare, it's the foundation from which then we go and we say, all right, let's improve education. Let's do right. So for me, that's the starting point. You know, let's dig more into climate stuff. Those would be the three things that I would say we've got to fix right now.
Yeah. Okay. And my three would be universal healthcare, right to living wage, and also climate change. Mm-hmm. And my question to you would be, because you say he's the most progressive president, and I mean, I've definitely seen some of those things, like, you know, his work with unions and et cetera.
Yeah.
What do you think, should I feel confident in his ability to get those things done? And I obviously know that, you know, there were, even when it was 2021 and it was Democrats with the majority, we had people like Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema.
Yep.
They were the ones, you know, kind of blocking things from getting passed. But do you think that that's something I can feel confident in as a voter?
Those are huge. Nobody has fixed those things, right? It's sort of a fraught question to say, am I confident in a second term Biden will fix health care, housing, and health care?
Not fix them.
Obviously not. Do I think that there are going to be opportunities, assuming Democrats have at least some control in the House or Senate, to make improvements? Yes, I do. And again, look at the first term. Biden has made tangible improvements on health care. He has made expansions to Obamacare. He has capped insulin at $35 a month for those on Medicare. He's brought big pharma to the table to negotiate on the 10 most frequently prescribed drugs, which we are soon going to get the outcome of those negotiations that are ongoing. There's been practical accomplishment there. So it would be a crazy thing for me to promise you Biden's going to fix these things. But based on the alternatives and based on what we've seen from prior presidents, it's hard not to say, hey, we've made some real progress here.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And I mean, obviously, I don't expect that he was going to ever have any chance of fixing those problems. I mean, that's not a 1 or 2 term or even like 3-4 term solution. It's a very nuanced thing. It's going to take a lot of time. But I don't want to take too much of your time. Let me ask you one more question.
Sure.
What are some reasonable progressive policies do you think we might be able to look at by November 5th? Like you were asking me initially, like, what do you think we might be able to get passed within reason progressively?
Passed or by executive order? I mean, listen, these things are really tough to answer. What mm-hmm. I would love to see is, food stamps is one of the most economically stimulative government spending programs because of how it works and its high economic multiplier. I would like to see food stamps significantly expanded to really see if we can deal with hunger once and for all, probably in combination with a permanent school lunch program, the likes of which we sort of saw dabbled with during COVID. I think it's a reasonable goal that could be achieved. On housing, I continue to believe that all other policy aside,
we've got to build way more housing supply. That's one of the ways you bring down cost, is you build more supply. So I'd be curious to hear from a legal perspective what could be done on housing supply via executive order. So that, you know, I'm trying to be reasonable. I'm not saying Congress is going to pass a huge overhaul. To the, I think that it's possible. I don't know that it's really on the agenda for the 7+ months that are left before the election.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to know what I felt like was obtainable, yeah, you know, as someone like you leans that in that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, I appreciate your input and I appreciate your time.
All right. There goes Miles from Denver. Why don't we go next to, oh, I don't know. How about John from Washington? John from Washington, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today? John from Washington, welcome to the program. Please accept my invitation.
Well, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Awesome. Thank you for having me on. I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed the two books that you put out. First one and the second one about the scientific method and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I was hoping that you'd continue putting them out, or my son just really enjoys them. And I like the idea of like a book about, like, you know, accepting that other people may win, or, you know, standing up to people when it's difficult to, you know, be that person in the crowd that says that's wrong and stuff like that.
Those are interesting ideas. I will tell you, the next book is almost done, and it is going to be the third in the series called Think Like a Voter. We're finalizing it right now. And it seems particularly relevant given the election year. And so Think Like a Voter is going to be the next one out. It should be out this month, assuming everything goes right.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I just wanted to say I really appreciate the books and thank you for having the show.
Thanks so much, John from Washington. Appreciate that. More info on the forthcoming book soon. As soon as I know more, you will know more. Let's go to Matt from New York City. Matt from New York City, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, awesome. So I just wanted to bring up the vaccine debate. I think it's really concerning with where excess deaths are right now. We're seeing about, since the vaccine rollout, about 600,000-700,000 excess deaths. And excess deaths is deaths over the 5-year average. So these are non-COVID deaths as well. So I think it's really concerning, especially with how bad myocarditis is right now, blood clots.
I hate to interrupt. Are you saying that I can't tell if you're saying the vaccine has caused all this stuff, or you're concerned not enough people are getting vaccinated? Which of the two is it?
No, I'm saying that these excess deaths, and a lot of people have had very bad adverse effects to the vaccine. I know two people that have had very, very bad effects to it right after their booster. So I don't know why we're not, this isn't being investigated with hundreds of thousands of excess deaths, and COVID is over. So if they're going to have a counter all throughout 2020, 2021, at how many people are dying from COVID, why did it stop? Because deaths right now are even worse.
So let's go through a couple things here, Matt. Hold on a second, Matt. You're saying so many things that are wrong that I have to try to correct some of them. And then you tell me where I'm misunderstanding. So COVID is certainly not over in terms of people are still dying from COVID. Part of the reason why we don't know the number is a lot of states are not reporting it properly, or they're reporting on a delay, or they're not reporting at all. So people are definitely still dying of COVID. We don't really know the exact number because I don't think it's being tracked accurately. So in that sense, COVID isn't over. What is the case is that increasingly COVID, including by the CDC, is being treated more and more like any other respiratory virus. And whether that makes sense or not, that's a debate. But so for isolation and economic reasons, we're seeing it treated more and more like the flu and bronchitis sort of stuff, et cetera. So that's number one. Number two, I'm not aware of anyone who died from myocarditis from the vaccine. It is true that the vaccine elevates the risk, particularly of men of a certain age, of getting myocarditis. COVID elevates it even more, but I'm not aware of a single vaccine death that was because of myocarditis. Can you cite one?
Not myocarditis, not okay. Personally.
Got it.
My dad, he's 65 years old, never had a heart problem. He had basically two minor heart attacks 5 days after the first booster.
So here's the tough thing about dad, Matt, about that anecdote about your dad, Matt. Obviously, that's terrible. I'm so sorry that that happened. One of the things that makes this really tough is when you have, you know, a 4-year pandemic and a whole bunch of people go from being 61 to 65. That's an age at which lots of people start having heart problems. And if we are just to look anecdotally and say, well, he was fine after a bunch of his vaccines, but after one, he had a heart event. It's really difficult to take that and to say the vaccine caused it and it causes it at scale. The epidemiological data doesn't bear that out. Right. And so no matter what, we want to take care of your dad. We want to take care of your dad's heart, cardiovascular health. But it's a bit out of the empirical realm when you make a comment like that and say, obviously, it's because of the vaccine. The vaccine causes heart attacks.
No, I'm not saying obviously.
Okay.
So and my best friend, who's also my CPA, he has extreme heart palpitations now. He was all about the vaccine. He said, you have to get it. You have to get it. And now he said that there's no way that it wasn't caused from the vaccines. He's got now a heart monitor. He's
and 35 he's a CPA, not a doctor. But I think that's important, right?
Well, his doctor said, he brought it up and said, listen, I'm pro-vaccine. Do you think it could be from the vaccine? And the doctor said, yeah, it's very high probability it was. But, these are things that a lot of doctors aren't supposed to be talking about.
I don't know on what basis you say they're not supposed to be talking about it. Who tells doctors not to talk about it?
Well, I mean, that's the question. I mean,
the reason I'm asking you is, you're saying doctors are being told not to talk about it. How do you know that? Who's telling them?
Well, that's what my friend said. He said, we're not supposed to be talking about this.
But why does your friend think that? Who is directing that we're not supposed to talk about it?
I don't know. Who knows? So, but in 2020, to pivot to a different point, in 2019, average deaths out of 100,000 was 8.8 people out of 100,000. In 2020, it was 8.9 out of 100,000. In 2023, it's 9.3. Now, of course, you could say, oh, well, population growth, right?
No, but you're talking about a rate. So it wouldn't population growth wouldn't affect that because it's per 100,000. So let me give you a couple of reasons why it's believed. Yeah, let me give you a couple reasons. So this is still being studied, but there's a few different reasons. Number one, the population on average continues to age. And so if you have two populations and one population is on average older, all else being equal, they'll have a higher death rate because overall, older people are more likely to die than younger people. So as you know, we continue to see the baby boomers enter retirement. We are skewing increasingly due to the lower birth rate and baby boomers aging to a slightly older population. So that's going to tick up your all-cause mortality rate slightly. Another reason why it is believed that the all-cause death rate is up a bit is because of the sequelae or the ongoing effects of this period during COVID when people were foregoing screenings, preventative exams, and lots of things, which led to issues not being diagnosed as early as they could be. And the longer term effect of that is that some of those folks are now dying. Now, I understand some people think, oh, the vaccine is killing people. There's just no evidence of that. And we do have other evidence that points in other directions. Does that make sense, Matt?
I think you bring up a good point with people not going for screenings. There were the lockdowns, you know, stay home in 2020, 2021. Mm-hmm. That definitely was not good for people. But listen, in 2021, there was 150,000 excess deaths. They said it's not from COVID. I mean, that's that.
But hold on a second, Matt. Hold on a second, Matt. Hold on. I'm sorry to interrupt, Matt. I'm sorry to interrupt, Matt. You first were talking about the rate, which made a lot of sense to me, because then we're really talking about population adjusted numbers. Now you're talking about just raw numbers of deaths. Why did you switch from one to the other after agreeing that the rate was much more informative to us?
Well, I'm not agreeing that that is the sole cause of why the death rate per 100,000 is continuing to go up.
Okay.
But that was not that could, you know, contribute to it. But
so, Matt, listen, I just want to get to kind of where you're at on this. Let's do real quick. Do you think the vaccines are causing these deaths?
I think it's absolutely. I think it's caused potentially 100,000 to 200,000 deaths in this country.
OK. And so, like, when Brett Weinstein said he thinks the vaccine might have killed 17 million people, you think that number's crazy?
I think that's high. I mean, that's globally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very difficult because this stuff is not being investigated. So many people are dying. Life insurance companies are saying these are working class younger people that are making up a lot of these excess deaths. Which
so
is
you
very,
think
very
the COVID vaccine has killed a couple hundred thousand people? And what do you want done real quick?
I would like it to be talked about on mainstream media. I mean, I don't like Biden. I don't like Trump. I think the government's very corrupt. I know you probably wouldn't agree with that. I think there's just tons of corruption. And I think it's being all brushed under the rug. We have a serious epidemic right now where young people are dying.
Yeah, I don't know if you've looked into that, Matt, but the sudden cardiac death of young people has actually not increased. So listen, I've given you a bunch of time. I think you've laid out your beliefs. A lot of those beliefs are based in false notions and you've got the facts wrong. But I appreciate you calling in and respectfully telling me what you believe. I think it'll be interesting to the audience.
Sure, bud. Keep it up.
All right. There we go. Matt with a lot dumping massive dumps of claims there. Let's take a very quick break. If you're holding on, just hang on another minute and we'll get right back to you. Did you know there are hundreds of commercial databases and people search sites that hold your personal information, and the number is growing every year? Anyone in the world, boss, an ex, can use these people search sites to see your online activity, to find your home address, phone number, email address, license plate number, family members, financial info, even your political beliefs. Europe has certain laws that protect people against this, but it is a big problem in the United States. The FBI is even buying this data from these companies to get private information about Americans without search warrants. And the solution is our sponsor, Incogni. It takes just moments to sign up. Incogni will send takedown notices to all of the major data broker companies to get your information removed from their databases, which they are legally required to do. And Incogni will keep you updated every step of the way with live information about who's complied, where is Incogni still working on it. Incogni will even send follow-ups and appeals on your behalf. Go to incogni.com/Pacman. You'll get 60% off with the code Pacman. That's INCOGNI.com/Pacman. Use code Pacman for 60% off. The link is in the podcast notes. One of our sponsors today is Manscaped, your destination for male grooming. Manscaped's new Lawnmower 5.0 trimmer is your key to looking and feeling good all over. It's equipped with two skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever you want. And it's waterproof, so you can use it in the shower. For guys who want the full grooming experience, Go for Manscaped's Performance Package 5.0, which comes with the lawnmower trimmer, but also the ear and nose trimmer, and some essential aftercare products like the Crop Soother Aftershave Lotion and Crop Preserver Anti-Chafing Deodorizer, plus two free gifts, Manscaped's Boxers 2.0, and the Shed 2.0 toiletry bag. Manscaped is trusted by over 10 million men worldwide, including me. There are only a couple of products like this on the market. Manscaped is the one you want to go with, whether you're shopping for yourself or a guy in your life. Go to manscaped.com and use the code PACMAN for 20% off and free shipping. That's MANSCAPED.com. Then use code PACMAN to get 20% off and free shipping. The info is in the podcast notes. Let's go back to Discord at davidpacman.com/discord and talk to some more people in the audience. Why don't we go next to Vince from Wisconsin? Vince, I hope you've got something good for me today. We have a note here that the last couple calls were a little bit so-so. So let's please redeem yourself. I want to hear you do well. What's on your mind today? And you've got to unmute yourself, Vince. You've muted yourself.
I know it was so-so last time. That's unfortunate.
All right, you're back.
Okay. So what's up with calls on a Monday today?
Calls are on the Friday show, as you know.
Yeah. I'm breaking the veil, right? No, but I have a brief question. Obviously, you're no supporter of Hamas. I'm no supporter of them either.
Right.
How do you think that Palestinian people should resist Israel?
How should Palestinian people resist Israel?
Yeah, or, you know, like being occupied. Like a lot of people on the left would say, oh, look at what Israel's doing over. I mean, obviously, they're not the sole aggressor, but how should they peacefully protest or resist what Israel has done?
Well, a couple different things. I mean, first and foremost, there's way too much approval of what took place on October 7th. For me to be comfortable saying that the overall opinion is for peaceful resistance. I'm not sure that's the goal necessarily. Obviously, it would be great if Palestinians voted for an alternative to Hamas. I don't know that that's actually even going to be offered to them as a possibility. Wow. And even if it were, I think that it's possible they might vote for Hamas again anyway. So, I mean, I think you're getting to a really important thing, which I know that there's a lot of ad hominems thrown at me about what I believe, but the Palestinians are not in an easy situation, because if we were to grant that somehow we could convince all of them that violence is not the way and that the Hamas approach isn't the right one, they themselves are so oppressed by Hamas that is it even possible to generate a situation in which they can disaggregate from that and resist? Or, you know, listen, it's possible that some of these surveys are wrong and the majority of Palestinians do want to just let's live in peace, two-state solution, no more violence, etc. Hamas doesn't care. Hamas is going to keep doing the violence. So I don't have an answer, you know, and so I know that there are sometimes extraordinarily hawkish reactions to the question you're asking. I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer because Hamas has the boot on the neck of the Palestinian right. population. Some like Hamas, some don't. Different surveys have different numbers. But with Hamas in power, I just don't even know how we get to where the question you're asking is practically relevant, because we're not getting past the oppression of Hamas.
Right. So we have to get rid of them first, you're saying, but how would we do it? I mean, that's tough to do. They don't hold elections. And
one of the opinions, and again, this, you have one opinion and then 10 reactions that say why it's terrible. One of the opinions you do it with special forces going into Gaza to take out as many Hamas as they can. But then the problem is, the leaders are sitting with billions of bucks outside of Gaza. So then can you really even accomplish it that way? I don't know. I don't know, Vince. I don't have the answer, and it's distressing.
That's all right. I mean, it's a good thing to say you don't have an, I don't have an answer either.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to say when you don't have an answer.
I agree.
Why do you think so many on the left are so fanatical about saying, I'm not going to vote for Biden over this one issue.
You know, I wish I had a good answer to that. It doesn't make sense to me. And the reality is, you know, you look at what's happening in Myanmar or the Syrian civil war or in Ethiopia. I mean, it's become a litmus test in a way that has now invaded a wing of the American left to the point where they want to throw out. I mean, remember, Biden's the president of the U.S. after all. They want to throw out what Biden's doing on infrastructure, health care, the economy, student loans, cannabis. You know, I could go on and say, I don't like the way that Biden has worked with the actual leaders that are in charge there. For me, it's like, hey, we're voting for the president of the United States here. And so I would prioritize issues a little bit differently. Now, here's the truth, Vince. The people who are saying they won't vote Biden over this issue, if you actually look at polls, this isn't even showing up anywhere close to the top five, often even the top 10 issues. Most voters on the left are saying it's economy, it's healthcare, it's these other things. So I think that that contingent is very, very loud. But I've not seen any polling that suggests that they're a significant contingent of the Democratic electorate.
Right. I mean, it's often easy to get caught up in what Reddit and Twitter are saying, but you know, a lot of people don't vote to begin with.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of it's astroturfing. Like, it's always interesting. You see these Reddit accounts every election year, either new accounts that are 2 weeks old or old accounts that are just starting to post again.
Yeah, we're dealing with it on our subreddit. Vince, thank you. I'm going to get to some other folks, but I appreciate hearing from you again. Let's go next to Andrew from Arizona. Andrew from Arizona, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hey, David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, David, I'm just wondering what action you think Congress should take to restore public confidence in the Supreme Court.
I don't think that it's anything Congress can do. I don't know that there's any action Congress can take. I think with regard to the Supreme Court, we need a couple things. Number one, we need an actual ethics code that's enforceable. They passed that BS ethics code and then said there's no enforcement mechanism. So that's nonsense. I think we need term limits so that we will know in advance. Okay, in 2026, there's a Supreme Court justice who is going to be forced into retirement by term limits. And then whoever is president then will get a choice. I think knowing that in advance, as opposed to leaving it to how long will they live and who can stick it out and which president, I think that that's another. So those are the two big changes that I would make. I don't know that Congress can do it.
Well, I think Congress can pack the court. Isn't that within their authority to do?
I thought that packing the court was dependent on the president, but maybe Congress has a role to play there. I don't remember the logistics of how it's done.
Yeah, because in order to impose term limits, you would need a constitutional amendment. And so that's a much higher bar. You need 3/4 of the states to agree to that.
That's fair. You clearly know more about the logistics than I do. For me, it seemed like such a pipe dream that I've not looked into the logistics.
Okay, yep. And then another thing, I think Congress has the ability to impose an ethics code. I might be wrong about that one, but they definitely do have the ability to regulate the court. And that's because the Article 3 of the Constitution is a lot shorter than the first two articles. And Congress has established the federal lower courts, which were not established by the Constitution. So they do have some kind of authority to regulate the Supreme Court in a way.
Got it. Okay. I'll fact check all of that and become more informed about it. It's just seemed so unlikely that I'll be honest. I haven't informed myself, but I think you're bringing up some interesting possibilities.
Yep. All right, David. Well, thanks for my call.
All right. Andrew from Arizona. And let's go to Pam from Florida. Pam from Florida, welcome back to the program. What's on your mind today?
Okay. Hey, David. Well, I was actually raised my hand in reaction to I came in the conversation with the guy who's talking about the anecdotal situation with the COVID vaccine.
Yep.
So I wanted to add my little anecdote that I had just come off a second open heart surgery, May of 2020, valve replacement, aortic valve replacement from a years ago infection, and aortic replacement of my artery. So anyway, long story short, I was I got the vaccine sooner than most because of that situation in February of 21. Moderna plus two boosters since then, and absolutely no issues.
Right.
So, you know, it's just, you know, no heart issues, no palpitations, nothing.
I mean, Pam, what you're bringing up is like there's anecdotes of everything, and it's not how we make decisions.
Mine doesn't prove anything, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But here you go. And I still never got COVID.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So that's good. And just, so that's why my hand went up. And then I wanted to also say something about, what was that guy just talking about? Where you just hung up on? I just had a quick comment.
About the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah. And the Congress right now, I'm sure being a Republican majority wouldn't want to act on anything anyway.
Of course.
Do you think that based on this decision, which it looks like all the Supreme Court justices voted to put him back on the ballot?
Yeah.
In Colorado, so it wasn't even just the right side.
It was totally unanimous. Yeah, and I discussed that on the Monday show, so check out that clip, Pam. It's quite a situation.
So do you really think they're going to give him full immunity, or they're just delaying it?
That's another question. Listen, here's my thought on this. I don't have any idea what the Supreme Court will do. We've got to beat Trump on November 5th by voting. That's my take on it, Pam. Yeah.
That's right. We're not going to rely on anything other than that at this point. All right. Exactly. Thanks, David.
All right, Pam. Thank from you. Florida. Great to hear from you. Let's go to a break and we will take more calls next week. One of our sponsors today is Leisure of NYC, offering ultra comfortable fair trade men's clothing at fair prices. Guys know it can be very tough to find good boxers and t-shirts. The search is over, because all boxer briefs by Leisure of NYC are made with amazingly soft, moisture-wicking viscose from bamboo. Super lightweight like air, but it doesn't bunch up, and it's also great for the planet. Leisure of NYC also makes really great Supima cotton crew neck t-shirts. Less than 1% of men's basics today are made with Supima cotton. It is the best out there. It feels like silk, quite frankly. You can walk around in a scratchy t-shirt all day, or you can enjoy the cloud soft feel of Supima cotton and actually love the shirt you're wearing. These are my go-to t-shirts and boxers. Nothing else even comes close to providing this level of comfort, and all of their products are fair trade and made sustainably. Go pick up the most comfortable t-shirts and boxers you will ever own, but hurry, because they often sell out, especially the boxers. Go to davidpakman.com/NYC and you will get 15% off with the code Pakman at checkout. That's davidpakman.com/NYC. Code Pakman saves you 15%. The info is in the podcast notes. I love my Helix sleep mattress. I've been sleeping on Helix mattresses for years now, which is why I asked them to be a sponsor. You actually take their famous sleep quiz, takes just a few minutes to answer questions about your sleep preferences, body type, sleep position, whether you have back pain, and Helix will match you with a mattress that's perfect for you, which is really unique and helpful because a lot of people don't know where to start when buying a mattress. I certainly didn't. Their newest collection of mattresses, called Helix Elite, come with a built-in Glaciotex layer to keep you cool at night, an extra layer of foam for pressure relief, and thousands of extra micro coils for best-in-class support and durability. All of their mattresses ship right to your door, totally free. They come with a 10 or 15-year warranty, and you get 100 nights to decide if you like it. My audience also gets a whopping 20% off all orders, plus two free pillows. Go to helixsleep.com/Pakman and enter code HELIXPARTNER20 at checkout. That's helixsleep.com/Pacman. Then use code HELIXPARTNER20 to get 20% off and 2 free pillows. The info is in the podcast notes. It is time for Friday feedback. Let's see what's on the minds of the viewers. You can always email info@davidpacman.com to get an email in. Sometimes we will choose a YouTube comment or a TikTok reply, or you never know what might end up featured in Friday feedback. We start today with PMPD, who says, legitimate question, though, where did Joe Biden accumulate his wealth? You know, I love this, because there is so much meat on the bone when you see a question like this. And first and foremost, it's important to say we know exactly where Joe Biden got his wealth. And so let's build a framework here. Joe Biden's in his 80s. And sometimes people ask the same question about Bernie Sanders. Oh, he's a socialist and somehow he's a millionaire. I think Bernie's net worth last time it was discussed was somewhere between $1 million and $1,500,000. First and foremost, like at a super base level, if you've made six figures for decades and you're in your 80s and you're pretty good at saving, you're going to be a millionaire. OK, and what I mean by that is just do the math. Grab an investment calculator, a future value calculator, and plug in, you know, if you make 150 grand a year, if you can save 15% of the gross, right, call it 22,000 bucks. You save 22,000 bucks for 25 or 30 years and it gains 7% a year in the market. You're a millionaire, particularly if you own a property. We've seen property appreciation. So like big picture, if you've been making six figures for decades and you're 77 or 81 and you're not a millionaire, you've done something wrong mathematically. When it comes to, you know, with Bernie, we know, I mean, he earned six figures for decades and then wrote a book and the book sold well and he was compensated for that. With Joe Biden, once again, earning low six figures up to close to 200,000 for decades as a senator, vice president, et cetera, wrote at least one book for which he was paid millions since it sold so well. That's just kind of the reality. When you are that high profile and you get a book deal, you make a bunch of money. And then he owns one or two properties. So he's a multimillionaire. That's what it is. We know the answer. I think the more interesting question that this brings up is, what is the truth of Trump's wealth? How is Trump not actually nearly as wealthy as he claimed to be? And we know the answer is fraud, right? When you say, how does Biden have, I think it was like $8 or $9 million, we know the answer. When Trump says, I had $4, $5, or $6 billion, I don't remember what the highest number he gave was, and he can't even make a $100 million bond payment in the recent fraud trial, why? We know the answer, because a bunch of that $4, $5, $6 billion was based on his wild claims about Mar-a-Lago's worth $1.5 billion. So the question of how Biden accumulated wealth, we have the answer. The question of how Trump isn't nearly as wealthy as he claims, we also have that answer. And the answer is overt fraud. A Blade says, I'm no Trump supporter and really wish we had a better option. But if you're not checking his name on the ballot this year, you're in complete denial or simply blind to what's happening right now. I wish these people would tell me, what is it that's happening? Because when they say you're blind to what's happening, I look at the unemployment rate and it's incredibly low. I look at the stock market and it's setting records almost every week. Inflation, one recent inflation metric has inflation at 2.8% over the last 12 months. New jobs, super high, higher than expected. If you're going to just come to me and say, David, can't you see what's going on, why you shouldn't vote Biden? I'm going to need you to tell me a little bit more. What is it that's going on that I'm completely blind to? I would love to hear it. Now, speaking of Biden and opinions about what's going on, I have a couple different ones to show you here. Let's start with a Reddit post from the mind of Biden's in trouble. This is Subcontrary, a user named Subcontrary, who says Trump alone got as many votes in the Michigan Republican primary as all votes in the Democratic Party combined, pointing out in Michigan recently, Trump got 758,000 votes and only 762,000 total votes took place in the Democratic primary. And what this person says is, even if all the uncommitted voters went for Biden, he still is short of Trump's number. On the other hand, they say, I heard somewhere that Haley voters are more likely to go for Biden than Trump, but it seems uncertain. I'm no electoral analyst, but this seems like a catastrophic sign for Biden in Michigan. Listen, there's some really critical things here. Number one, there is no Democratic primary. And I know people say, oh, but Marianne. Oh, but Dean Phillips. At the time of the Michigan primary, Marianne had suspended her campaign. I guess she's now unsuspended it, although maybe it's suspended again. There is no real primary happening on the Democratic side, as is always the case when there is an incumbent. On the other hand, on the Republican side, you have 40% of Republican primary voters wanting someone other than Trump. And Trump voters are highly motivated to go out and vote in the primary to show we still want Trump. I don't think Biden may lose, but the fact that there seem to be more Republican primary enthusiasm than Democratic primary enthusiasm in Michigan, to me, is not a big smoking gun of the inevitable failure of Biden. Now, here's a different perspective. JC Eurovision on Reddit says, no matter how unpopular Biden is, he will win the election, and says, I know Biden and Harris are unpopular right now, but you guys are a vocal minority. Do you have any alternative to them? None. The polls suggesting Trump will win the White House proved that the American people want less democracy and more fascism. Suppose it will hold until November. Will you be very happy denying them a second term? Will you be very happy having your precious rights taken away? Are you better off under Trump when he was president? Look, they might be unpopular, but the Republican Party has shot themselves in the foot and they really can't learn their lesson. If Roe hadn't been repealed, they would have governed with ease and gave Biden a check. But the Dems proved the polls wrong in 22. It will happen again in 24, I'm afraid. We don't have a choice. We have a president who, despite his unpopularity, has managed to make decisions that impact everyday Americans and vowed to save democracy. And we have a twice impeached, four times indicted criminal who dreams of turning America into a fascist theocratic state. Joe Biden has done everything he can to save democracy, and he will do so for the next 4 years to stop Trump and his vision of fascism. Listen, I sympathize 1,000% with the desperate need to deny Trump four more years, but the confidence is a bit much. Trump really can win in November. And I'm not playing games of, oh, you say that it's not looking good, so people will vote. I'm not playing any games. Trump genuinely could win in November. So the motivations are completely correct here, but the confidence is where I'm worried. We should assume the election depends on each one of our votes. And if that's the case, we've got to get out there and vote. Here's a reply to, so we interviewed Cenk Uygur not long ago. Cenk posted a clip about it on Twitter. And then John Patterson responded. And John Patterson said something very kind. Quote, David Pakman is probably one of the best progressive debaters I've ever seen. Hope you don't mind me saying this, but he's probably just a tad bit better than you, man, referring to Cenk. And why he hasn't debated Ben Shapiro and other conservative giants, I have no idea. Plus, he's articulate and professional. So I really appreciate the kind words. A couple different things. I didn't think Cenk and I were debating. We were giving our opinions of Biden as a candidate. It's not really a debate, particularly when it's all predicated on something that hasn't happened yet. Will Biden win or won't he? We don't know yet. Secondly, I don't think I'm a good debater, and I really don't like doing debates. And part of the reason is Sam Harris has explained this really well. No matter how well you prepare, the person you're debating can set a series of small fires that you're not prepared to rebut. It can look really bad. Debates are really more about being articulate than they are about presenting the superior ideas. So I, especially the debates for clicks sort of stuff that's really common online, I both don't think I'm very good at it and don't think it's that useful, but I appreciate the kind words regardless. Downtime Redditor posted to Reddit, do you guys think the brain drain will eventually lead to conservatives rethinking their policy? Or do you think they know it won't be enough to really matter? And they explain, Florida's facing a brain drain due to Meatball Ron's anti-woke policy, which has really thrown New College of Florida into a wreck, 40% of professors resigning, et cetera, et cetera. Recently, due to the Alabama Supreme Court ruling that embryos are children, some hospital clinics won't do IVF. So the idea here is that professionals, smart professionals, will leave Florida. They'll leave Alabama. They'll leave Texas. And the question is, will conservatives realize that the brain drain is hurting them? I don't think we know the answer to that. And there's sort of two parts to this. Number one, the brain drain is already hurting conservative states. And so far, they haven't changed anything. And you can see this by looking at how much innovation is greater in blue states by virtue of startups, by virtue of Nobel Prizes, by virtue of acquisitions, mergers and acquisitions. All of these different metrics already show us that the brain drain is hurting right wing states now, and they don't seem to acknowledge it or be doing anything about it. So the fact that they're already not doing anything about it suggests they will continue not to. More than likely, red states will just blame liberals for whatever brain drain effects impact them. The only caveat to this is that if MAGA is defeated and you get more reasonable Republicans in power again, many of whom are retiring, they may be more willing to say, hey, we've got to turn it around. The brain drain is killing us. I'm thinking people like Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney's retiring. So it doesn't look particularly good. I'll put it that way. Chill Winston, with a very brutal shot across the bow on the subreddit, says, I am so tired of hearing voicemails from the Eggman. I just switch the episode off when I hear the name mentioned. I don't find him amusing, insightful, or whatever I'm supposed to feel. Is this guy a personal friend of David or just a random contributor who seems to be disproportionately represented on the show? I don't expect it to change. I wanted to put it out there to see if I'm the only one. Yeah, you know, if you don't like the Eggman voicemails that we play, you should see the ones that don't make it onto the show. Those are the really bad ones. But honestly, I like the Eggman's comments. It's just my opinion. And at the end of the day, the voicemail segment is what am I interested in? Okay, here is one message about the Dr. Phil interview from Aventasian, who says Dr. Phil is confused. Dr. Phil thinks people are denying history and biology, but he has given no evidence of this. When asked to do so during the interview, he pointed out that people disagree on whether we should have statues of flawed historical figures and name schools after them. But this isn't a disagreement over history itself. It's a disagreement over how to portray historical figures. There's no actual disagreement over historical fact in the disagreement he describes. Likewise, the trans issue, while it is related to biology, isn't actually over biology. The anti-trans and pro-trans sides are in complete agreement over how biology works and how biological sex works. The disagreement is over how to conceptualize gender on a social level and how to use language. It's incredible how people get so worked up over these arguments while not understanding what the disagreements are. This is a really good point. When the debate is, should we have schools named after slave owners? It's not a dispute over whether there were slaves, whether slavery is right or wrong directly, or over whether those particular individuals own slaves. It's a debate over whether there should be schools named after those people. It is also the case that much of the discussion around trans issues isn't about biological sex. It's about whether the social, culture, sociocultural and medical questions about trans issues are better for biology or sociology or psychology or how they should be. This is all true. I think if you really want to point to who wants to rewrite history, it is actually the right wing. And of course, Dr. Phil was alluding to the left wanting to do it when it is the right that wants to revise curricula about slavery to suggest slavery maybe wasn't that bad for the slaves. That's a rewrite of history. And so there is an attempt to rewrite history taking place. It's just being carried out overwhelmingly by the right wing. Get your emails in, info@davidpakman.com. We've got the bonus show coming up this week. It's not Pat on the Friday bonus show. It's me. I'll tell you what's going on. And of course, you can get instant access by signing up for a membership at joinpakman.com. If you are not fortunate enough to get the bonus show, I'll be back with a new show on Monday.